This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
And welcome to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. I am Igor, and hey, welcome into the show, Bob.
Well, thanks. Good morning to you, Igor.
All right. Well, it's brisk outside. My feet are sogging wet from walking in the yard with the dew. That's all right. That's a good start to a busy day here to enjoy the beautiful day that we're about to have out in the yard.
Yeah.
Go ahead and tell us what's on your mind today.
Okay. What's on my mind today is noticing and dealing with a few people on them asking me a few questions about one in particular, floppy plants.
Floppy plants?
Yeah, floppy plants. Plants that grow up, and a lot of times this time of year, they kind of flop down, you know, and they're wondering what's going on.
Okay.
And that can be, I'm talking about perennials mostly here. So mostly what could be happening is over-fertilizing. And overcare. Some plants, I'm going to talk about one in particular, a stone crop sedum. That's a fleshy looking plant, almost like a succulent, and it blooms only late this time of year. So it can, and those flower heads on top are large and heavy. So sometimes it does grow up, and then this time of year, that flower opens up, collects a little dew. It gets so heavy that it flops right on down to the ground. Now, the plant is still fine. You know, it usually doesn't hurt it at all. But one of the reasons it may do that, and probably does that, is over-fertilizing. That's a real good indication, and that can happen with a lot of your perennials. You know, I know a lot of us like to fertilize and water quite regularly, and then we create a lot of growth that way, growth that the plant can't support once it does flower or a hardy, windy day. So keep that in mind, even to the point where sometimes if we have a floppy plant like that, especially the sedum or something that may come from the prairies or even desert-like conditions, that possibly when we do plant them, we should mix in a little sand to make the soil less fertile and drain better, so these plants can feel like they're home again instead of in a real lush rainforest like we are here in Bradford.
Lush rainforest.
Yeah.
That's a descriptor. Okay.
Well, it's almost like that. We're called a temperate zone. And that means we get a lot of cool weather, a lot of wet weather, and some plants just enjoy the heck out of it. Some plants enjoy it too much to where they kind of overgrow. So that may be part of your problem with some of those floppy perennials.
So they overgrow, they become top heavy, and they droop.
Yeah, that's all. Yep.
Okay.
Now, chances are, you know, again, that's not going to harm them, but I just want to tell you about that. So maybe next year, give those types of plants a little less fertilizer, and maybe don't water them every few days. Most of the perennials, you know, if you've planted them in the right spot with the right care, we usually don't have to fertilize and water it at all. Unless it gets extremely hot and dry.
You said that a few times this year on a few different shows, that it's good to starve your plants sometimes now and then.
It is. It is indeed, because that sends a message to them that they become a little harder, a little stiffer. That way it gives them a chance to add cells to their stems rather than adding cells to the top of the plant and continue growing. And this can also happen with shrubs, too. A lot of people this time of year say, geez, I got to trim that shrub again because it's getting so tall. Well, possibly you've been over caring for it. Maybe try next year not fertilizing it. You shouldn't really have to fertilize an established tree, shrub, perennial, even your lawn. You shouldn't have to fertilize them after they've been established for a year. That first year, yeah, it could be important. But after that, with the weather we have, the conditions we have, they should take care of themselves. And if you've chosen the right plant and put it in the right place. There is a case where if we put a sun-loving plant in the shade, it can start the what we call stretch. It's growing up really fast, looking for more light. And, of course, then that one can become floppy, too. So there is that case. But if we've put it in the right spot with the right conditions, chances are that we've over-fertilized and caused it to become weak and floppy.
Our phone lines are open, by the way, at 368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. Whatever you'd like to talk about for Bob, you know, any gardening-related, yard-related, tree-related, give us a call. It doesn't matter if it's a little off-topic what we're talking about at the moment. We'd love to hear from you. And we're on Facebook Live as well, facebook.com/WESB1075. And you can comment on there and ask your question there as well.
Yeah, and I do enjoy the questions because it helps me decide which way to go.
Yeah, you know? Which topic are people more interested in?
Yeah. Otherwise, I'm going to just talk about what I've got on my mind for right now.
Now, when you talk about established bushes and shrubs and things like that, and you don't need to fertilize, and you do fertilize at first, or you can, to help them to get, you know, to get going when you first plant them. I was wondering, because I've heard two different kind of trains of thought on this when you're planting a shrub, where you know, when you get them from the, you know, the greenhouse, or whatever, they come wrapped in the burlap.
Yeah.
Some people say leave it; it'll naturally rot off of there or whatever. And then some people say no, you got to cut it open and spread the roots. What's your thought on that?
Okay, and I hope I don't confuse you. Most of the time, when we get, they call them bald and burlapped plants. Most of the time, it's untreated burlap, and it will rot away quite quickly. But quite often anymore now, they're using treated burlap.
Great.
So, yeah.
So there's always a question now.
Yeah. So if it's greenish looking at all, then it's probably treated burlap. And it's going to be a very good idea for you to, once you get it in the hole in place, before you start backfilling it, take a knife, a sharp knife, and try to cut away as much of that as you possibly can. Don't do it before you put it in the hole. Get it all in the hole first, because once you cut that burlap, the root ball may start to fall apart.
Okay.
Now, if you know that it's not treated burlap, I still cut off as much as I possibly can, especially we don't want any of that burlap wrapped around the trunk still, or even that top 6 inches away from the trunk. Try to cut all that away before you backfill it, cover that root ball up.
That's a good, because that's not going to rot as fast because it's not contacting the ground as much
that,
as the other.
That, right? And it acts as a wick.
Oh,
it can take moisture out of the soil and evaporate it into the air. If there's any burlap at all at the surface or above the surface, it acts as a wick, pulling the moisture away from the root ball.
That's sneaky.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's important that no matter if it's treated or not, that you don't have any burlap at all showing at the surface. So if it's treated, cut it all away. If it's not treated, at least get it below the surface of the soil.
Awesome. Well, thanks for indulging me. I know that wasn't on your notes there, but I was always curious about that.
No, and that's
from when I planted, because there I couldn't figure it out.
That's a real good question, though.
So we ended up cutting it anyway.
Yeah, know, when in doubt, just cut it all
you
off.
You got it. Yep, that's what we did.
Yep. And sometimes even now, they're not even wrapped in burlap. They're a lot of them will come wrapped in a plastic or a material like that. And that's all got to be removed.
Yeah,
once you get it in the hole. Now, I know you can't remove that's on the bottom of the plant once it's in the hole, but at least you've removed as much as you possibly can. So that gives the roots a real clear path to get out of that root ball and into your soil?
Very good.
Yeah, that I like that. That's a good question.
Thanks.
Wow, I'm still thinking about that. You know, that's so doggone important. So
floppy plants.
Yeah, floppy plants. Now, I'll talk a little bit about the shrubs, too, because that can happen to them quite often, too, where they start to really grow.
And then they get top-heavy?
Top-heavy, especially come winter.
Mm.
They'll start to gather a little snow, a little ice, and then bend down. They possibly could even break, but quite often, if we have a long winter, they'll bend down, stay bent down for a long period of time, and then be stuck in that position. They won't pop back up, especially if you're not going out there shaking the snow off of them after every big snow. So, again, that can be not only over-fertilizing and over-watering. Sometimes we plant a plant in soil that's just real good. You know, I tend to do this a lot. Every planting I do, I like to mix in a little compost if I have it available, or peat moss, and both of those can really supercharge a plant into a growth spurt. But I know that come fall, I'm going to have to trim back some of that new spindly or weak growth. So it's all right by me, but some of you, you know, you don't want to be out there trimming your shrubs constantly. You don't want all that work involved. You want to just plant it and make it look nice. And that's good. That's fine. But be aware that if you do over-fertilize by using compost, peat moss, manure, any of those things, that you may be spurring on a lot of growth. You may be. Or if your soil's that bad, in a lot of areas we do have real bad soil, it's a necessity that you do incorporate and amend the soil to give that plant a good head start. Matter of fact, it's really well worth it, knowing that I'm giving it a good head start. It's probably going to grow a lot. I may have to do a little pruning. That's probably a good sign. But after that, you know, after that first year or even the second year, you hope that the plant has spread its roots out into the native soil, and things are going to get under control, and it's not going to put on these great big growth spurts to where it gets so weak that it bends over from a hard rain or a snow load. So another, on the opposite end, we sometimes see plants that aren't growing like they should be. And there can be a lot of different causes for that. One in particular that I got to see the other day, a few plants planted real close to the driveway that weren't performing like they should. They're still okay, but just not performing. Now, the client happened to be one of the ones that does a lot of salting on his driveway for a good reason. You know, none of us want to slip and fall on ice.
No.
That salt can affect your plants quite a bit. You know, can stunt their growth, can even eventually kill them. And by shoveling or plowing our driveway, we can start to pile a lot of snow on some of those plants. And that doesn't matter whether it's a perennial or a tree or a shrub. We pile snow there in that area. And that can affect those plants too. Quite often what it can do is by a pile of snow can add up a lot of weight, and it can compact the soil. It presses down on the soil so that it has fewer and fewer air spaces, and makes it very difficult for the roots to spread out. And if the roots can't spread out, the top of the plant can't perform like it's supposed to.
Makes sense, yeah.
So that can be one cause.
Never even thought of that, the compacted snow.
Yeah.
And smushing the ground in.
Yep, it can be, seriously affect your plants.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe not kill them. There are some plants that are extremely hardy. I like to put daylilies and hostas along the driveway because they just accept those conditions very, very easily. There are other hardier than a daylily and a hosta. There are other hardy plants, though, that can be placed in that condition. So be aware of that, though, too. Another one that I see quite often is landscape fabric. You put it down, cut the little hole there, and then plant the plant in there. Now, knowing that once we do cut that hole, now we've restricted the ability of that plant to spread out because of that landscape fabric. It's doing its job. It's stopping the weeds from growing there, but it's also stopping the plant from multiplying or spreading out in that area. So when we do plant a plant in a bed with landscape fabric, make sure that hole is big enough so that the plant over the years can continue to multiply or spread, whatever we want to call it, and increase its size. So that can be a bit of a problem, and it's a common one, so be aware of that. And another one, and I've seen this one quite a few times, even recently, a plant that just didn't perform real well, and I dug it out and started exploring. Most of the time, I'll tell you, only dig as deep as the root ball is, but in this case, I dug just a little bit further and found a huge flat rock. So actually, that plant was planted on a huge flat rock. So this is how it affects that plant. It still has room to spread out laterally or horizontally, but it didn't have room because of that rock to go down deep. And that's important that a plant be able to go down deep, because those deep roots are going to be the ones that are going to find that water when it's real hot and dry. And they're the ones that are going to store all the nutrients for next year. And if it doesn't have that ability to send that root down, it doesn't have the ability to have a lot of storage over the winter, and it doesn't have a lot of ability to search out for that water when it's really hot and dry. So that can affect the plant. It usually doesn't kill it, but it can stunt it. So it just doesn't grow like you thought it should.
So now, not only do we have to worry about digging up the rocks to get our plant, we have to dig below the plant to make sure there's no other boulders blocking our work.
Oh. Yeah, and this just means poking a couple holes, you know.
I got boulders everywhere. Oh, it's bad.
And so I better back up here a little bit. Now, this was a big flat rock, you know, about a foot and a half.
Oh, okay.
Wide. Anything that's golf ball size and smaller is good.
Most of mine are like softball size.
Yeah.
Sometimes softball they're size. Double softballs.
I would remove those. Yeah.
Okay.
And I got the same yard too.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I dig a hole, I'll wheelbarrow full of soil and a wheelbarrow full of rocks. Yep. I got a real rocky soil too.
Do you have the rocks? Do they have fossils in it like mine?
No.
I have little shell.
Do you?
Indents in mine.
That's neat. Yeah.
Not on all of them, but a lot of them. Yeah.
No, mine's just plain rocks. Don't dig a big hole 3 or 4 foot deep. You know, just kind of poke around there to make sure there isn't any big rocks. If you hit a small rock, leave it. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Plants have adjusted to growing around rocks, splitting a rock in twos, going right through them. So don't worry about
those. That's pretty neat.
But do explore to make sure there's no big flat rock or an old tree stump or a piece of concrete or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. We'll be right back with more tips from the Master Gardener, Bob Harris. And, of course, your phone calls at 368-9372. And we will be right back right here on The Gardening Show on B107.5 FM.
You know it's coming. That colder weather is on the way. Make sure you're ready with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. They're fully stocked with quality Allegheny wood pellets available by the bag or pallet, as well as bagged rice and nut coal. They also have a full line of stovepipe in stock, single wall in black and galvanized, plus B-vent double and triple wall. And now in stock, Empire natural gas heaters. Be prepared for the weather ahead. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show on B107.5. And Bob, it's story time, I understand. You wanted to tell a story.
Yeah, I do. It's one of my favorite stories. And because a lot of our plants aren't native to America. A lot of our plants came from overseas. And as a matter of fact, a lot of our plants came from Japan and China and Asia. So an interesting story about a man, Ernest Wilson, was a plant explorer way back in the early 1800s, a very famous and very successful plant explorer. And thanks to him, we have a lot of the plants we do have today, including the Easter lily. He was the one that brought it to America first. And he was called Chinese Wilson because he explored China so much. He, in 1910, this was after the 1800s, he was getting older and in his later years. He explored China extensively, and in 1910, he just escaped sacrificing his life to lilies. He had gathered a huge load of lily bulbs and was on his way home when a mule train was caught by an avalanche. He jumped off his mule just before it fell down off the cliff, but wow. his leg was broken. He did get seriously hurt.
Boy, if I had a nickel every time my mule fell off the cliff, yeah. You know,
yeah.
I hate those days.
Indeed. at the same time, another mule train was coming up the mountain. And back then, the mountain climbing and hiking way was the one coming up had the right of way. The one going down does not. So In order to prevent another avalanche, and because he had a broken leg and he couldn't climb up out of the way, he was forced to lay down on the trail and let the other mule train walk over him, knowing, now this guy knew that a mule's not going to step on me. They're going to avoid me. And of course, their wagon, they could steer it so it going over him.
Wow.
So it became quite a story that he survived that. And also with that story, he was forced with a limp the rest of his life.
So wait, the other mule train didn't stop to help?
Oh, he didn't need help. He didn't request help. He just had a broken leg, which was common, you know.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, when you're exploring the backwoods, especially he was in the Sichuan Valley of China, back in the mountains, very, very steep mountains, very few trails. So he had no choice, but he couldn't climb up out of the way because the hill was too steep. So he had to just lay down, knowing that that was probably the safest thing to do.
People were a lot tougher back then. That's just a broken leg. Keep on going.
Yeah.
Don't worry about me.
So the story goes that that's where we got the term lily limp.
Oh.
Yep. From Ernest Wilson, because he was out collecting lilies, and he ended up with a limp the rest of his life from letting that other mule train pass by him. Of course, he did eventually gather lilies out there in the Sichuan Valley, and there was a lot of plants that we gathered from that area that we grow today still. And bring them back to America and became very successful. I don't think he ended up with a lot of the money. Of course, back then, you know, we didn't have a real good system of patenting things. And he wasn't really interested in that. He just enjoyed collecting plants and bringing them back to America for everyone to enjoy. So as one of my favorite stories, he's one of my favorite plant collectors. There's a lot of plants that we grow today that are due to Ernest Winslow Wilson, or Mr. Lily Limp.
Mr. Lily Limp. Wow. And I just feel bad for that poor mule that fell off the cliff.
Oh, no mules fell off
you the said, cliff. Oh, I thought you said he lost a mule over the side of the cliff.
Oh, no, just his wagon.
Oh,
his wagon slipped off.
Oh,
I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, the mules are so sure-footed. That's
what I was wondering. Yeah. I'm like, okay, well, that's kind of a sad story. But then, of course, I was going to say, hey, I have audio of the event here. There goes the mule.
There it goes, yeah.
Man. Well, hey, thanks for the story. That's really neat. Lily limp. And that's where
Lily
that came from.
Yep.
About in the 1800s, you said?
Yeah, well, that was 1910.
1910,
but, okay. But he had been exploring since the 1800s. Okay. He was one of the few Americans allowed in China.
In China, right.
Yeah, he had made friends with a lot of Chinese and treated them well. And so they treated him well and let him explore.
Cool. I wonder how many other plants that we don't even know about that he...
Yeah, there still are. There still are explorers out there. There are still plants that we have never seen before.
Well, it's such a huge area.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that area, when we had the ice age, the glaciers did not hit a lot of that area because of the way those mountains are shaped. They went around those mountains rather than through them. So a lot of those mountains there, some of those plants are very ancient.
Very neat. Okay, great. We have about 4 minutes left in the show. And, hey, we are still taking your phone calls if you have any questions for Bob. It's 814-368-9372. Or you can comment on our Facebook post. It's live on Facebook right now on facebook.com/WESB1075.
Okay. One more little thing there about your grass.
Okay.
Your grass. Probably a lot of people have noticed the grass is growing quite rapidly again because it likes cool, damp times. Your grass grows the quickest in the spring, then it kind of slows up in the summer, and then it starts to grow quickly again in the fall because it's what we call a cool crop. And it's also an evergreen. It can grow through the winter a little bit. Very slow, you know, through the spring and the fall, it can grow a quarter inch a day. In the summer, it may stop growing totally even. And then in the winter,
that would be nice.
Yeah. In the winter, it still can grow, but it may only be a quarter inch a month rather than a quarter inch a day.
Mm.
So now is a good time to lower those mowers. If you've been cutting at 3 inches, now's the time maybe to start lowering it. You can do it in gradual stages till you get down to, you know, inch to inch and a half. I like inch and a half. We're going to help our lawn that way, and we're going to help chop up those leaves. And it's a good idea to leave those leaves, if it's possible, right on the grass. You know, if it gets to the point where when you mow over and crush up all the leaves and your yard's all brown, well, then maybe you better rake it up, because we don't want to smother the grass, but we do want to supply the grass with the nutrients that are left in those leaves. And there are a lot of nutrients left in there, mainly carbon, and all life depends on carbon to continue life. So that's a good idea to just mulch them up right in place and try to leave them.
Leave the leaves.
Leave the leaves if at all possible.
As long as the sun can get through, right?
Yes.
That's pretty much.
And it doesn't matter if they're maple leaves or oak leaves, any of those kind of leaves.
Just chop them up.
Yeah, as long as you chop them up. They will deteriorate quite quickly because there's a lot of creatures in the soil just waiting for that leaf, and they'll come up out of the soil and feed on that and turn it into compost. So you've just fertilized your lawn by doing so.
Excellent. And you don't even have to spend money on big leaf bags.
That's right.
Hey, I like it. All right. And you save your back too.
Yeah.
From raking all those things.
But to me, that's one of the hardest chores I have to do in the garden is rake.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I always get a blister. I always get a backache. But raking is my hardest chore. So I try to, if I have to go over twice, I'll go over my lawn twice just to chop up those leaves so I don't have to rake them.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. Great. Well, it's good to know that I'm not just being lazy.
No.
Yeah. See, I was feeding my lawn. That's what I'm doing.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the ticket. Thanks a lot for coming in again this week. We'll see you next week.
Okay.
All right. It's the Master Gardener, Bob Harris, and the Gardening Show brought to us by Worth W. Smith Hardware. And we will talk to you again next week. And by the way, we are on demand. So if you'd like to hear the show again or a different show from either this season or seasons past, you can check out the Gardening Show on demand page at WESB.com. Have a fantastic weekend, Bob.
Thanks.